Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. Many thanks to all the folks that have been emailing, calling, blogging, you name it. The show we did with Michael St. Clair this past Tuesday on the 6th has really made some waves around the planet, and a lot of positive things are coming forth. There are a lot of people who are really awake and really in tune to what's going on in the world, and they're already working towards original creative solutions. And we're going to talk about that tonight with our guest, as well as some other topics. Here we are, December. Here I go again. I've been in the month of December archives all day today, and I've got that month in my mind. January the 8th, 2009. If you're on the East Coast or the Central Time Zone, it is already the early morning hours of the 9th. And here we are, Thursday night, Friday morning. And another weekend is rapidly upon us. Time seems to be moving faster and faster each night. And, of course, all the events that are occurring around the world are moving faster. And if we take some of the counsel that we've been given by our most recent guests, and, again, this is a, in a way, I don't see how you can arrive at a particular mindset or a particular understanding, maybe insight is a better word, about how to handle things and keep going back to all this dark stuff. But we're shining the light on it, so it's not as dark as it would be if we weren't paying attention to it. The idea that came out on Tuesday was to listen with all of your being, but listen without thinking about what you're hearing. Let the meaning of the words soak into your consciousness. And we're not asking you to believe anything. We never do. We offer you and we counsel you on doing your own research, do a little reading, listen to some speakers. Many of the topics that we raise issues about are available on the internet or definitely available in books and in the libraries across the country. Now, they seem to be disappearing from time to time, much like Barack Obama's yearbook disappeared from the Mercer Island High School. But that's another story. So as you're listening to tonight's show, keep these things that we've been talking about for the past 2 months in the forefront. And don't forget that we're not trying to preach to you. We're not asking you to believe in anything. We're trying to, our best, the best we know how, is to walk a similar path with you, have a nice, gentlemanly, or ladylike discourse on things that are happening, and look for solutions to our problems. Because if our government, which has stolen trillions of dollars, was capable of it, they would have applied that money to our problems, if money is even the answer. But they haven't done that, so we have to do something ourselves now. We're at that point where your very survival on the planet is going to depend on how well you can tap into your gifts, your abilities. With that, I would like to bring a good friend onto Evident Footprints. He has co-hosted or guest appeared on the TNT NewsHour back when we had that here on BBS Radio. And he has his own show, the Road Warrior Radio with RBN, That's Republic Broadcasting Network. In fact, I was just on his show a few moments ago, and we're doing sort of a tag team here tonight. We jumped over to BBS Radio, and we're going to continue our discussion and get you caught up to what we've been talking about. And with that, I welcome my good friend, Mr. Chris Hinckley. Chris, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thanks, Don. That's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure and an honor.
Well, we had the opportunity to talk about a lot of craziness. My listening audience actually heard some of those stories over the past few months on this show, and you had actually been discussing the issue of administrative procedure or administrative law, which is quite a bit different from constitutional law.
Yeah.
And it's really gotten your goat. And that's usually when a person moves into action is when they become angry. Although we're learning, you know, to control our emotions and to be discerning as to what's really going on, because it's one game after another, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And to channel that emotion properly, because like I said, you know, earlier, I mean, I watched C-SPAN today, and there were a few moments where it was really good that I was alone, because, you know, language like that shouldn't make its way out into mixed company. So it's very upsetting sometimes, you know, to see what's happening. But, you know, to channel that energy properly and actually make use of it. I keep saying that, you know, we've been extorted, obviously, and these proliferating bureaus and agencies and things have used the extorted labor and wealth to create these mechanisms like the media industrial complex. So why not, since they don't have reverse, you know, to use Sun Tzu's idea, why not use the Achilles heel that's already built in, and the fact that you can stick something in the media industrial complex and it has no reverse. So if you put something up and it grinds it up and spits it out, there's nothing it can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point that you bring up, too, because some people say, well, you just stay out of it and don't get yourself into those situations. But sometimes the fact that you are that kind of a threat to the establishment, the powers that be, so to speak, but at least they perceive you as a threat. It's not necessarily that you're coming from that angle at all.
Yeah.
Your interest is to be a sovereign individual. You're reasonable. You're not walking around murdering people. You're not robbing people, breaking into banks or people's houses, or you're not raping women. All the things that criminals do, and yet you find yourself in a situation, if you get a traffic stop, you find yourself being treated as if you're a murderer. In fact, murderers are treated more decently because they don't expect to get any money out of them. They put them into the system that generates cash for the pharmaceutical companies and for the security companies and for the food companies. So what we're talking about here is discerning what the game is, seeing what is really going on, and you decide, okay, if I'm in this situation, and how am I going to handle it, in other words. And you have some interesting ideas in terms. What we're talking about here, folks, is the difference between what we understand is our Constitution and what is really set up to run the courts like a big business. It's the same thing. They have somebody, they have a general manager, don't they?
Yeah.
Called the judge.
What's interesting about that is, oh, goodness, where was that? It was, I know where I saw that. It was,
you're having an Alzheimer's moment, are you?
Kind of. Actually, I was headed for a case based on what you were saying that I was looking at recently, but that brought to mind the fact that I think It's either a CRS report, a Congressional Research Service report, and I've looked at several in the last few days, but I think it was a piece of legislation that was in the hopper in the 110th Congress, actually, that I'm thinking of, where they referred back to the congressional record from the 40s, I believe, and they were talking about the fact that since they were operating under several presumptions in this administrative discussion, I know which one it was. It was the CRS report from 1992 titled Reorganizing the Executive Branch, I think is what it was called. Reorganizing the Executive Branch in the 20th Century Landmark Commissions. And Ronald Moe was the author, but they mentioned this fourth branch of government discussion, the headless fourth branch that Congress created, which is a weird discussion in and of itself. But the reason that I mention it is because they go on to say the report, it's citing the Brownlow Commission report, or the Brownlow Committee report, which was commissioned by Roosevelt, of course, in 1936, and in March of 1936, and then they produced their report and submitted to the president January 1, 1937. But in that report, the report accepted as points of departure several premises. First, that the president is constitutionally the head of the executive branch, and their presumption was therefore he's the chief administrator, and that the president requires institutional assistance to perform his duties as the chief administrator. But the point is, they're presuming this duality of position, and you know, basically he's the head administrator, which is what comes to mind when you said that. So that was a long version of a short point, but...
Well, you know, what's going through my mind as I'm listening to you, it's like, okay, this started out as Evident Footprints, but in 2 minutes, this is going to be the Rush Limbaugh show. You know what I'm saying? It's just, let's call it something else, and let's make it something else. And don't take offense to that, Rush.
Yeah, right.
Like he's going to be listening tonight, you know?
Right.
But... I'm just using that as an example. I could have said Montel Williams, but this isn't TV, you know. So
right,
it's just a flagrant violation of or a betrayal of everything that we are told. Right? I mean,
no question.
It's in writing, and yet it's no more valid than a mortgage contract is these days, or a security agreement that you own stock in a company, because they can just say, well, the company doesn't have any money.
Yeah.
Or now all the taxpayers have to put up $30,000 to bail out these companies. Excuse me. Are we missing something here? Are we making an investment in stock? Is that what this is? Because what's to prevent somebody from putting $30,000 into Goldman Sachs as an investment?
Yeah.
And having it be something tangible that they own, that maybe gives them a return. This is all backwards. Why don't we see this going on?
It's pretty mind-blowing, but I got to say, you know, if I may, the thing that's encouraging, because we were talking earlier about solutions, and I said that I feel like, you know, with your research and with the research of some other great people, I think we're really doing something different now. So I don't think, you know, in the old definition of insanity, doing the same thing, you know, and expecting different results, I really think that we're doing some different things. I think some different discussions are being had. I think we're keying in on some different information and some different points. It's not the same old rhetoric that's being kicked around, where maybe we chew on some different things, but it all leads back to the same punchline, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that there are a lot of different discussions popping up. A lot of people with the lights that are coming on genuinely that are having their own lucid thoughts and then discussions, and that's really exciting to me.
Yeah, if I could, Chris, I'd like to reopen that door that we opened up at the end of your show.
Yeah.
I think it's appropriate, especially in light of some of the things that have been occurring, you know, on this show over the past couple of months, as I referred to in my introduction. And there are a lot of people that are really getting something out of the messages that have come through the many guests that I've had on the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tell my listening audience that I'm a musician first, and I'm a human being who happens to have decided at a very young age that he was going to be a musician his whole life, and I'm still a musician. And I got into research as a result of my metaphysical gifts and my ability to see things that others don't see. Yet, I also came to learn that we can all see these things. And so there must be a reason why we're not seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I had mentioned Krishnamurti on your show briefly as someone who studied in a very low-key way and taught in a very low-key way the problems of mankind and how we could solve them. In other words, the things that we're not doing that we could be doing, or the things that we are allowing to happen, whether we do nothing or we do something, we seem to be doing the wrong thing. If we keep getting undesirable results, which is all a problem is, it's undesirable results, then all we have to do is start doing the things that give us desirable results. So what would the desirable results create? What would that situation be? Well, it would be a new reality, wouldn't it? If it eliminated a problem, it would have to be outside of this matrix, this paradigm that we're in. So we're thinking here in the sense that we have to use words and we have to convey a thought. So on that basis, but it goes much deeper than just using words and saying the same things over and over. We know that that's what's going on in the Patriot movement, that they're saying, well, they're getting ready, the tanks are over here, and the planes are over here, and they're moving the ammunition over here, and soldiers are coming back, and they're putting them in these bases here, and they're getting ready to line up the cattle cars and the shackles, and, you know, they're talking about these things, and these are things that are happening, but we keep playing the game.
Right.
It's a game, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
The banking system is a game, and the educational system has become a game, and organized religion has become a game, and there's a lot of fiction that's still coming out right before our eyes. I could start naming preachers, but I won't because I don't want to waste the time, but I'm just saying as an example. And now I'm hearing things that the universities are going to fall apart financially.
Yeah.
Well, that's because the universities are part of this whole financial scam.
Mm-hmm.
They used that potential income on these student loans as monopoly money, much like a casino in Las Vegas. Only they call it Wall Street. They call it the NASDAQ or the Dow Jones. They call it the stock market. And they have secret funds that are only accessible to very few people. So when we look at all these things that are going on and we really examine what is going on, we say, well, why is that way? Why are they allowed to do that? Because they're in charge? Wait a minute. These are our representatives. They're supposed to be doing what's best for us. Well, if they're not, then you're questioning that, you're already moving outside of that stream that I had mentioned on the past show. And Michael St. Clair and I talked about this for almost a good hour last Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
That all the despair of humanity is in a stream, and we're all part of that stream. We all contribute to that. And they know it. You see? They know it. Now, we call them the controllers, and yet in reality, we're part of that stream, so that makes us the controllers, too.
Well, when you said that earlier, that reminded me of, you know, Orwell when he wrote that in 1984, if the proles only understood, you know, and woke up, then they'd shake these evil tyrants off like a dog shakes ticks off or fleas off its back.
Yeah, or and, at least it scratches them off.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, be done with it, and it would be that simple. Basically, like you're saying, you know, we are the controllers because we're complicit in the fraud. Once we kind of go, huh, and keep going.
Yeah. Now. The point I'm getting at here is, okay, so we see the banks are corrupt, the stock market and these brokerage firms are corrupt, mortgage houses are corrupt, the savings and loans, many of the credit unions, everything in the financial community is corrupt. It's all based on illusion to begin with. Let's step out of the stream for a moment or get off the merry-go-round and look at it for what it is. So why are we trying to fix it and develop another system within the matrix? Or why are we trying to create a new matrix?
Well, you know, that brings up an interesting point because this, I really believe this administrative state discussion harmonizes any issue that anyone has, you know, anyone that's encountered the tyrannical, abusive nature of the administrative agency world, the administrative state, which really is our government. It's a corporate administrative state, as you and I know. You know, it's not what we mistakenly call government. Like you keep saying, it's an illusion. And what it really is an administrative agency collection of 10,170 interlocking for-profit corporations and sub-corporations headquartered most readily identifiable in the District of Columbia. And, you know, for proof of that, like you say, I mean, to me, in my words, saying what you're saying, not what do we hear, not what do we presume, but, you know, what is it? How is it behaving, really? And for proof of what I just said, you can look on Dun & Bradstreet's website and find, you know, all the listing of the corresponding corporations, our local city and county are for-profit corporations. And though the layout looks a little different, as you and I know, you know, you won't find a corresponding, you know, map of corporations like a map of the United States per se. It would be like a map of the states and then like a topographical overlay. There's a little difference, but for every, you know, rest assured, for every government agency, there is a corporate counterpart. And the proof of that is the sign in the parking lot. And this is, you know, one example of myriads, but the parking lot on our county courthouse here has a sign that literally says for Kootenai County courthouse customers only. Now I ask you, what is a customer of the Kootenai County courthouse?
Yeah.
And here's the thing to punctuate what you're saying, you know, I mean, we are the controllers. These people are volunteering to go in and to be customers to be extorted. Am I wrong?
No, actually, yeah, they're actually complicit in the whole affair. They're aiding and abetting.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. I mean, you could argue it's a violation of, you know, things like the Trading with the Enemies Act and all kinds of other things, but, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, because we're all asleep at the wheel and we're coasting along, bumping along, and so don't wake anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why we see things that they're doing, okay? It's whether or not we feel fear, whether or not this has the capacity to create fear within us is the big question. And fear itself is an illusion, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels very real to the person that's going through it. I can remember times when I had certain types of fear, in certain situations, but I wasn't one walking around with fear all the time. You know, you see a rabid dog and it's coming at you and it wants to bite you, you might sense fear. Or why not? You know you're going to run. Why be afraid? Just run.
Right.
spend the energy on running. And you know, because the fear is, we somehow justify it. We acknowledge it as if it serves some purpose. It doesn't serve us any purpose except to keep playing this role that it's created for us to play. And, you know, it's like the Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz. They didn't have any giants trying out for the part. So why try to be a Munchkin if you're not?
Yeah.
You know, you have to at least fit the mold for that part. And what are movies? There we go. You know, it's funny I brought that up. I was just thinking of Munchkin, but The Wizard of Oz is really the story of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, the wizard was that guy, and what did he have protecting him? Just a little curtain. That a little Scottish terrier, I should say, could grab and pull with its teeth. And it
you know, just so you know, the Scots don't use the term Scotch because I'm just kidding.
John McCain.
I know. That's why I mentioned that.
I mean, McCain.
Exactly.
You see, we get into all of this illusion. Even the very characters. That's the essence of why I do the research that I do, is to show people, look, this is not what it is. So what we've been given is an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many illusions do you think the average person has to see before they understand that they're looking at illusions, wherever they look?
It makes you wonder, I don't mean not to acknowledge the question, but I'm just thinking it makes you wonder about those, you know, the little exercises that, you know, kids go through now, and they're on the backs of cereal boxes and things like that, where you're looking for the, you know, find these hidden things in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
To sort of acculturate you to the fact that, you know, it's all an illusion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can remember certain kinds of, what was it, Cracker Jacks, I think, had a rubber ball, there's the oil company, and this little steel spiked thing, okay, they called it Jacks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or there were a couple of them in there, or you had to collect them. And so one time you might get some Jacks, another time you get a rubber ball. But what is the purpose of putting things in food? Well, it made it fun. It got you conditioned. You wanted the, not for the caramel covered and peanut popcorn. You wanted that little prize.
Yeah.
And so for some reason, it was always in the bottom of the box, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because
we
didn't understand how packages and things settle. You know,
some settling may occur.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So it was a very clever way to entrap kids into getting you know, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, so to speak. It's just mm-hmm. another version of it. Except it was in a box called Cracker Jacks.
Yeah.
And it had lots of color. I mean, that was a very fancy box for what was inside of it, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
It was sort of like almost like a foil type of paper. It had very glossy paint and very animated. And it's just one example, because that's really the whole food market for children, cereals and the cookies and the candies and all the things that make people become overweight or cause them to have all kinds of medical problems. But those people will never get blamed for causing such massive health problems in society. Never. That will never happen. And they worked it out the same way with the drug companies. So yep. Every turn, there's it's like there's an enemy there.
Yeah.
And so in light of that, we really should step outside of that stream or jump off of the merry-go-round or the carousel, whatever you want to call it. It could be a Ferris wheel, too, where the thing, you're not controlling it. It's controlling you. You don't have to get on the merry-go-round or you don't have to get on the Ferris wheel, but you do it voluntarily. And they've sort of allured us into getting on it, on the invisible one.
Yeah.
And then they call it life. They give it this general name that really doesn't have a meaning in a noun form. It's always the verbs that mean something.
Yeah.
Living is quite a bit different from life. Life is a very abstract concept or being is very powerful. And doing, and then the references to things always in the context of how they have been conducted in the past. We must always do things as they were done in the past. Well, and this is the concept behind case law, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody got a judge to say, "You win," and that made it law.
Mm-hmm.
When it was the first time that had happened, it became case law. Now you could go into court and sue somebody because one judge said you win, or a jury, but ultimately the judge controls the whole thing, doesn't he? In administrative law, he's the banker.
Yeah,
he's actually the teller, and he's the bank vice president and the CEO of the bank.
Yeah. Yep. Running the equity court, which is the only court in the land these days.
Yeah, and then to play in the business arena too, don't you have to comply with the Uniform Commercial Code?
Mm-hmm.
See, they have all these little traps for us, and we have so much trouble seeing what is going on. Or hearing really what's being said, don't we?
Yeah, in our defense, in everyone's defense, recently I've really kind of been fixated on and fascinated by the administrative discussion. I think that when one truly understands how that discussion works, and understands how it's connected to all these other issues, then it harmonizes everything. If you can find where someone was injured by, or where their life intersected the administrative state, the agency world, the injurious and tyrannical nature of it anyway, and you hear it in these weird types of situations or cases or things that we all are familiar with. For example, one would be a lady goes into traffic court and they're trying to take her kids away. There's one locally where a lady has acne and they're trying to take her kids away because they're saying, she has acne and her kids are, they're getting acne, so she's abusive to her kids because she has acne, literally. There are, what was one of the other ones locally?
Did she get the acne from walking in the park, or? I mean, how did she get it?
Exactly. Well, it's this kind of crazy nonsense, and people, I think this is one of the biggest factors that continues to perpetuate and drive the fear. It's kind of like a self-perpetuating system, because you hear all these weird, tyrannical, abusive stories, and who knows basically how the administrative state, so to speak, is going to respond. And for people that don't know, the short version of this discussion is back in 1946. You can look it up in the Congressional Record. You can find it online. 1946 congressional record, as Congress was in the run-up to passing the Administrative Procedure Act in 1946, they were discussing the merits of, you know, whether or not to pass it and the reasoning behind it. They cited the Brownlow Committee report that I mentioned earlier, but which was the 37 report leading up to the APA and the passage of it in 1946. Anyway, in the Brownlow Committee report and in the congressional record of 1946, Congress openly talks about how they had created a headless fourth branch of government, complete with a Bill of Rights and everything, and what it really is a Soviet system, Soviet meaning councils. And so now we have this administrative agency world that literally runs everything. You know, if you ask the average person, here's a short little exercise. You know about the three branches of government we learned about in school. Yeah, okay, well, let's go through some of these organizations or agencies and just figure out which of those three branches they fall into. Okay, go ahead. Department of Education. CIA, NASA, Federal Reserve Board of Governors, IRS, you know, where do those all fit? They all live in the administrative world. And some people will say, yeah, but, you know, they're all part of the executive branch. Not exactly. That's not true.
And how is it that a corporation registered in Puerto Rico earns that right?
Exactly. Why is this not, you know, and why is this not taught in civics classes across the country?
Because it's the truth.
Yeah.
And they don't want us to know the truth.
So what's interesting about this discussion is when you get on it, all of a sudden everything starts to come into perfect focus. You know, the agency world is in charge of everything. And what really makes it, to me, what really makes it make sense is the fact that for over 130 years, the courts have been ruling, citing a peculiar phrase that you can't find anyone talking about. I couldn't find anyone talking about it. You know, and we all know of patriot law types and everything, and that's great. But why is it that the courts seem to do the weird things that they do? Like, you know, you find cases where judges say the most bizarre things, like, great argument, Mr. Jones, but this is not a court of law and the Constitution is inadmissible in my court. How can a judge say that and not hang from a lamppost outside his courtroom?
Or in the courtroom.
Exactly. And the reason is because in the administrative agency world, they've been ruling on this peculiar phrase for over 130 years, ever since 1875, Farmers and Merchants National Bank versus Dearborn. They've been using derivations of this peculiar phrase, and the phrase is, when the state creates rights in individuals against itself, as opposed to, you know, parenthetically I would say, as opposed to your God-given, constitutionally safeguarded, inalienable rights, the ones that cannot be taken from you, but that can be surrendered or forfeited. When the state creates rights in individuals against itself, it is not bound to provide a remedy in the courts. Yikes. Or it may withhold all remedy. Uh-oh. Or it may provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive, however mistaken its exercise. I don't like that. And
in other words, they can do anything, and whether they're right or wrong, whether they have harmed someone or not, they can still go ahead and do it.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it makes perfect sense. So basically, if you are playing in their administrative world, if you're complicit, like you were saying before, then you agree to let the state, basically the administrative state, have its way with you at will.
Yeah, that's another form of insanity, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
The principle that you're describing is in and of itself, but that we would allow that to happen is also insanity. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you know, in fairness, the whole reason I began, you know, down this path is because I was going to say, you know, in fairness, who's been talking about this? Who knew about this? And this peculiar phrase, you know, you can pick apart little pieces of it, and I quote it exactly as it's most commonly used. And so if people pull pieces of that apart and go look for it, the only places you'll find it is in the cases that it's cited. You won't find anyone talking about it. And the problem with that is that, for example, here's a 96 case, Margaret Odell, petitioner, versus Alexis Herman, Secretary of Labor, in 1996. Supreme Court of Appeals, this judge said, you know, they always cite a derivation or, you know, the peculiar phrase I mentioned itself. But this judge said this, says the United States is not, by the creation of claims against itself, bound to provide a remedy in the courts. It may withhold all remedy, or it may provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive, however mistaken its exercise. Okay, fine. But, you know, why am I saying all of this? Why is this so important? And, you know, I'm saying, in fairness, no one's been talking about it. Yeah, but so what? What does this have to do with my constitutional republic? Well, here's what it has to do with. This judge goes on to say, this court, and I would say, as all others at this point, this court has recognized a general presumption favoring judicial review of administrative action. And that is the key. The reason that every constitutional argument has failed in the courts for, you know, into antiquity, as far as we can, you know, see in our recent history, so to speak, is because ever since this discussion has really kicked into high gear, and really since the passage of the APA, the courts have presumed, because there are so many benefits created by this administrative state, you probably bump into some of them. You know, does a person have a job? Okay, they, you know, what are some of the rights created in individuals against the state? Driver's license, social security card. Oh, okay. Well, who doesn't have one of those? Exactly. So they recognize a general presumption favoring judicial review as opposed to constitutional law and due process, judicial review of administrative action. So it's an administrative tribunal they begin with, meaning they overlay this administrative tribunal over the top of any constitutional proceeding, so to speak. And when you walk in, if you don't lift that presumptive veil of administrative tribunal, then basically it's like, you know, holding out a quarter in the palm of your hand and then dropping an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper over it and saying, see the quarter, see the quarter. They're looking at the paper going, I don't see the quarter anywhere. So it's the same discussion. They don't see the Constitution because they recognize the general presumption favoring judicial review of administrative action. So when you say Constitution instead of I am barring judicial review, then they ignore your constitutional plea, and we see it every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's...
Well, but isn't that just another fraud on the public?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's fraud.
Unilateral and presumptive contract, which is an oxymoron.
It's actually even conspiracy, and it's against the country at a time of war, which makes it treasonous.
Yes, I agree.
That's simple, okay? Now we can step out of the stream or jump off of the merry-go-round and say, which is what you're saying, is I refuse to participate in this. This is a game. It's an illusion. And it's like Las Vegas, isn't it? I said that earlier to you tonight.
Yeah.
It's like a casino. There, you may win a little bit here and a little bit there, but in the long run, they get it all.
The house always wins. You know, a friend of mine says the best advice his dad ever gave him was never bet on another man's game. And, you know, that's exactly what we're talking about. You can't beat the devil at his own game, and that's exactly what the administrative state discussion is. Because the more you get into it, the more you realize that, for example, through the Federal Register, they can change the rules at will. literally day by day. They don't have to wait for Congress.
Oh, yeah. So, what's his name? George W. Bush signed in his first few years over 800 signing statements. These are just affronts to any laws that were passed, giving him dictatorial powers, literally. But people don't know that that's going on, that one stroke of a pen can change it all. That's if you opt to play the game. That's if you opt to stay in that stream. Right?
Well, yes. And, yeah. I was going to say, you know, I think what's exciting, you know, speaking of new information, and again, you know, hopefully I'm doing a good job of conveying. This is actually really, I don't know, it's information that I think you have to chew through for a while, it seems like. That's what everybody's saying. But I tell you what, when you know, for anybody that's listening, when you get a hold of it, it really, everything comes into perfectly clear focus, and all of a sudden you understand why you have all of these weird, seemingly anomalous things happening. And then the punchline to that, to me, that has me so excited and so fixated on this is, this is when people do start waking up and do start saying, you know what, I've had enough of this. Because when you understand what that phrase means, when the state creates rights and individuals against itself, basically you have no remedy, and they can provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive however mistaken it's exercised, meaning, as you said, they can do whatever they want, and, you know, so what? Sit down and shut up, and what are you going to do about it, basically, is the attitude that it starts to convey. And when you understand that they're corporations, and you think of it like the rude customer service gal, you know, halfway around the country, who doesn't care, you know, a lick about you, but and treat you as such, that's exactly how these agencies act. And so then all of a sudden, it seems like the more I have the people's, I don't know, it becomes clear, and their attitude starts to shift. They start to say, well, you know what? I don't think I like that too much. You know, I got pulled over the other day, stopped for doing 44 and a 35, and was talking to a number of folks locally, and they were saying, you know, you can do this to beat it, you can do that to beat it, you can do this to make it go away. And I said, yeah, I know, but I think what I'm going to do is we're actually going to go in, and like you said, you know, we'll go to Vegas, we'll see what happens. I'll pull the lever, and I figure maybe we can slow down the commercial, we can impede the commercial flow, we can kind of wound the beast, so to speak, where it hurts the most, which is a commercial, by going in and educating people and basically having this discussion. And the punchline to it all, while I'm there, will be, as you know, Mr. Administrator, that presumption, again from this 96 case, you know, that presumption favoring judicial review of administrative action, that presumption, however, may be overcome by specific language or other specific indicators of congressional intent, using the sort of unambiguous and comprehensive language Congress uses when it intends to bar judicial review altogether. And they've also held that that does not bar substantial constitutional challenges. So the point, for anybody that's not following that, the point would be you throw out judicial review. Like I said, the only thing left is the constitutional, because the two are mutually exclusive, but that's all there is. Mm-hmm. Mutually exclusive, collectively exhaustive, meaning they're oil and water. They don't mix, but that's all there is oil and water. So if you don't have judicial review of administrative action, all that's left is constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
But that poses a problem for them, because my presence there is a violation of my Bill of Rights, and therefore is very possibly a treasonable action.
You know, the civil courts, or when one engages in civil procedure, they file papers, which are usually given a one-word description, right? And that word is lawsuit. Now, we think of the lawsuit as an action, don't we? Or it's something that's going to produce action, so we consider the whole process of what goes on in a lawsuit when we think of the meaning of the word. But if you look at the two words that the word lawsuit is made up from, law would be the rules, the procedures, as they're deemed and adjudged, and then recorded as such, and to be considered the new basis. So the law is constantly changing, isn't it, as judges make these types of decisions, like you have acne, therefore I'm taking away your kids and your motorcycle because you don't have windows to hide behind when you're out on the roads.
Exactly.
Okay. They'll come up with another reason is what I'm getting at here.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the word suit, and we think of suit normally as clothes, but here's an interesting definition in my Apple computer dictionary. Informal, an executive in a business or organization, typically one regarded as exercising influence in an impersonal way. Now, that's chock full of words there. What do I say is exercising influence in an impersonal way? What does an impersonal way mean? In other words, I'm not a person? So it's acknowledging what there? Administrative law, isn't it? That definition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just if I dissect this sentence, that's what it is. Now, the suit is but they're calling it an executive in a business or organization. I never heard, unless they're saying, well, the suits are here, we have to act civil, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, but then they say typically one regarded as exercising influence in an impersonal way. But isn't that sort of describing a judge, too, or
yes.
a lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
Right? If it's impersonal, then what is it? Would be the next question. I'm trying to think outside the box here, is what I'm getting at.
Right. It's wordplay, if I could throw in...
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Exactly.
Well, if I could throw in a story real quick that reminds me of, there was a case down in California. This was a landmark case because it became, basically it set a precedent that sent the administrators or those guys that call themselves judges back to the drawing board. We can't use this wordplay anymore. During the defense, the gentleman on the stand, literally, he wrote on a piece of paper in capital letters, each letter for the word indictment and a space beneath it, and then underline on each word as it was written, I believe, on each one of the documents in the case. And the point is that based on the U.S. government printing office style manual, the word indictment was actually not a word. And so he said, this is not a word. This is 10 words. And meaning it was an acronym. And so what they've done, as we know, throughout modern history through this administrative world, what they do is they put out this phony definition of things, then they truncate it, then they make it an acronym, then all of a sudden the acronym basically becomes a generally accepted word, and that was what he was illustrating in this case. But he said, the prosecutor basically, to make a long story short, he pointed out that the prosecutor was committing fraud and that he didn't have enough years left in his life to serve out the prison term that he should serve after he was brought up on charges for this fraud that he was committing. And, of course, the case was dismissed, and as I said, that set a precedent, and they haven't used that technique, so to speak, ever again because of that one case. But it was wordplay. So, anyway.
Yeah. Now, there's another term that you reminded me of in law, and it's a term that lawyers use and judges use. Most people you don't hear use this because it's two French words, and the words are voir dire, which literally in French means to see, to say, or to see what you will say. It could be interpreted like that.
Mm-hmm.
But to see, to say. And it's described as a preliminary examination of a witness or a juror by a judge or counsel. Now, the judge is examining the person. Why doesn't the jury get to examine the person? You see, it's already a stacked deck to start off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or counsel, meaning the attorney. Okay? Well, those are the setup representatives of that system that you're just describing, the administrative system.
Sure.
And it's run by all parties, like they know it's an administrative system.
Exactly, and they're all compensated by the same stupid, you know, system, and in most cases, you know, by the same corporate entity. You know, you have the guy who sits on the bench, the prosecutor, and the defense, who all, not only, of course, as we know, you know, hang out and play golf at the same country club, but, you know, their paycheck reflects the same names and signatures.
Okay, now, let me repeat this. Voir dire, a preliminary examination of a witness or a juror by a judge or counsel. There's a second definition. An oath taken by such a witness. Now, the preliminary examination is being called an oath. It doesn't make any sense. So there's an intention. Of course, if that's true, if this is a true definition of the word, how can an examination also be an oath?
Because in the administrative world, it's how can we get you to contract, basically.
Yeah, I'm thinking more along the lines of how can we force you to paint yourself into a corner?
Yeah.
Right? That's mm-hmm. That's the street way of saying what you said.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, so now, in the short amount of time we have left here, what we're saying here is here's another example of the illusion.
Well, you know, to get to your point, you know, the Bible says, you know, two or three witnesses, right? You know, you go to a job, for example, you get a job, and like I said, the administrative world, if you play in it, they say, if you derive a benefit, then the state can have its way with you. So you have to take the collusive documentation to even get the job, meaning you have to bear witness against yourself with a driver's license and social security card, for example, two witnesses against yourself that say that you are the state created fiction, and therefore, you know, the state can have its way with you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, to me, analogous to your point.
Yeah. And you know, I'm thinking of employment applications. They always ask for three references, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're led to believe that they're going to call these people and ask them about you. You know, is he a good person? Is Don the kind of guy we want in our company? You know, does he steal? Or does he come to work drunk? Or is he bad with time? You know, what can you tell us about him that he didn't write down here?
Yeah.
It's more a fact-finding mission on who you know and where they might go looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's what my intuition tells me it is, because they never call. They've never called any of those people that I've written down on an application like that.
Yeah,
I've only done it a few times in my life, but nonetheless, And it, sometimes it was just in a contractual sense, let's say, you know, not necessarily an application like that, but just, you know, they might say, they call them character references.
Right.
You know, it's just word games, isn't it? It's just it's just an unending, you know, it's like Scrabble. Kind of.
Well, if you're gonna throw that out, then I always think you have to throw out the, when you think of the affiliations, you know, what groups are you affiliated with? I always think of the Masonic organizations. You know, what club are you involved in so that we can, oh yeah, it's, you know, you're one of us. Okay, you're hired. Anyway.
Well, yeah, that can be true too, but that's your personal data, whereas, you know, I was just referring to these other people, because those people can be turned into witnesses if they want, or, you know, they're often used in the setup situations. I can't imagine what state did this Acne case take place in?
Idaho.
In Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, there are actually people in Idaho that still have acne?
That's the rumor, I guess, but that doesn't mean it's true. You know, again, the state can do whatever it wants, and like I said, you know, when you really get a hold of the magnitude of that statement, you mean they're actually saying we can do whatever we want and it doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong, and so what? Yeah, that's that. I mean, what else does that phrase mean, you know? And I know that, you know, I've cited, you know, speaking of Idaho, I've mentioned right from the Idaho pandemic influenza response plan. By the way, I got to tell you, we were talking about propaganda a little bit earlier. I drove by a billboard the other day. No kidding. I had to send you this email. I took a picture of it. It says 9,000 deaths in Idaho with an asterisk next to it. And beneath the explanation of the asterisk, it says potential during a pandemic outbreak. Can you believe that?
They're actually preparing people to accept those figures.
Well, speaking of that, yeah. Next to all of this,
and there's more to it than just that, but that's now preceding next, the action.
Yeah, well, next to it says, are you ready? Gives the website, I think it's panfluidaho.org, and it says, are you ready? Anyway, you know, speaking of this, the state can do whatever it wants discussion, every state in the union, so to speak, even though it's one administrative deal. Every state in the union has the equivalent of what we call here, or what we have through Department of Health and Welfare, called the Idaho Pandemic Influenza Response Plan. And you can find it at pandemicflu.gov, I think is the big one. But anyway, this is a Department of Health and Welfare document. This is not some blogger making this up. It says that the response phase of the plan, the pandemic flu outbreak plan, is initiated by one person, the state health official. Yikes. Says that the response phase is terminated. The decision to terminate the response phase is made by one person, the state health official. Yikes. But what's really frightening is the criteria, some of the criteria to end the response phase include things like mass vaccination, and also that the outbreak never occurred. So basically what that means is that the state health official can decide to activate the response phase of the plan and decide to mass vaccinate people and then say, oops, the outbreak never occurred. Oh, well. And for anybody wondering, well, you know, that'll never happen. Actually, if you read the plan, in the same document I made reference to, it says that during a state-declared disaster, Idaho's military division of the Bureau of Homeland Security basically takes over. It is the de facto government, literally, and it says all admit all agencies, all state government agencies, fold in under and provide support under the IDEOP, which is our, you know, emergency plan. Anyway, so, and we had a state of disaster declared last July because of the floods, which will obviously continue now since we've had over 100 inches of snow. But
what was the number of people that they had listed on the billboard again?
9,000. 9,000 deaths in Idaho is the potential, they said.
Okay. That's percentage-wise, based on the population of Idaho, that's a very, very low number, isn't it? That's less. There's 1,293,953. I mean, if it was only 93,000 people, that would be 10% of the population. But we're talking about 1,293,953 people in the state of Idaho. And so that's what, one-tenth of 1%? Less than a tenth of 1%.
Yeah.
Or 1%. My math is off today. But it's a minuscule amount, so they're going to make all those people take a vaccine, even if it might make them sick, even if it may give them the flu and kill them, which has happened.
And even more ironically, you know, in that report, like in all of the reports, I mean, they're honest enough to say, well, you know, that can never happen. In other words, you can never have an avian flu outbreak, you know, that goes human to human unless it's created in a petri dish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the same report. It's in all of those reports. And so then you really start scratching your head and say, you know, like you said, okay, so that's a low number anyway, but based on the fact that it only happens in a petri dish, it's absurd that we're even having this discussion. Why are we having it?
Mm-hmm.
And the same report says that regardless, and I think this is an exact quote, I was actually looking for it while we're talking, but it says, regardless of the amount of preparedness, an outbreak cannot be avoided. What? Even though it can't happen unless it's created in a petri dish? What is wrong with this picture?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's more Scrabble, isn't it?
Yeah. Insane.
Well, Chris, this has been interesting. We touched on a few things tonight, but we're out of time. We got to say goodnight to the listening audience, but we're going to do this again, I think, in a couple of weeks, right?
I think it was the 20th, wasn't it?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. So actually, it's a little bit less than 2 weeks. You'll be back on the show, and we'll be all over the board again. The audience has heard me discuss the issues of my Barack Obama pieces. So,
I have the 21st. I just double checked.
Oh, is it the 21st? Okay,
yeah,
that is okay. I guess I could open up my schedule and look at it, couldn't I? I'm just trying not to exceed bandwidth here by opening up too many programs.
Yeah.
Let's see here. It's going to pop up here. It is the 21st. You are correct. Okay. Well, but it's been fun, and we're going to do this again on the 21st, aren't we? We'll be on RBN for an hour, and then you're hopping over here with me to my show, Evident Footprints. And why don't you give your websites out and your broadcast time? I can do that if you want me to, but
it's the show is Road Warrior Radio. It's on Republic Broadcasting, as you said, and website of same name, roadwarriorradio.com. The website that most of the interesting information, including compressions of subject matter, find its way to is jonasgospel.com. Those are probably the two main websites. for information. There are a couple others. There's one in particular, but that's not quite online to really shot from the rooftops. But the show airs on Republic Broadcasting Network Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and so that's 10 to 11 Mountain, 11 to 12 Central, and 12 to 1
yeah.
Eastern.
Yeah, and so we're going to do that again on the 21st, so you'll be back with us on the 21st. Looking forward to that. And
me too.
I'd like to see how this works out for you. applying
yeah,
principles.
It'll be interesting. If I have the audio by then, I'll let you know, and maybe we can bring that on. We'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah. All you have to do, you can play it. Or you can email it to me. You know, we'll make sure Seth gets a copy. Even
I intend on holding class while we're there, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting to see what comes out, and see if you get recess or they make you go sit in the corner.
Well, the point I know we got to go, but you know, the point would be, like you were saying, I mean, if you do that and people see that it is an illusion, then all of a sudden the fear, like all the other illusions, melt away and the curtain comes back on the wizard. Anyway.
Yes, exactly. And I use that often. And I still say Dorothy Gale has lays claim to Kansas from the Wizard of Oz. And Barack is not from Kansas. I can tell you that. His family's not from Kansas. Oh, my goodness. You know, even Judy Garland wasn't from Kansas. So,
yeah.
So, Chris, thanks for being on the show, and I look forward to your next visit on the 21st, and also coming back on your show. And Happy New Year to you also.
Thanks, Don. You too.
Thank you. And it's time to say those dreaded words. We've got to say goodnight to our listening audience. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, our listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.